broadcasting statewide on the Golf Club Network, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
And good morning. It's a beautiful, okay, it's not. It's mostly cloudy today. A chance of thunderstorms. So if you're going out to play a round of golf, you want to go, make sure you're listening for that thunder that will let you know just how far that lightning is away. And then you go home, get back into the clubhouse, take cover. If you'd like to play a round at Poipu, there's a 10:50, a 12:30, a 1:20, a 1:30. They've got 25% off on the sale rack. And may you all hit the sweet spot every time. Coming up this morning, Dane Gingrich, Jeff King, Shaili Chopra from India calling in, Ed Kageyama from Maui, and Ron Syrak from the PGA Championship at Oak Hill. We'll be thanking our sponsors right now, though, first.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Acura of Honolulu. Now more than ever, choosing an Acura just makes sense. With this much traffic, you should ride in comfort. Introducing the Acura RLX and RLX Advance. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, visually stunning. Nature and Robert Trent Jones Jr. conspired to create a stunning venue for golfers of all abilities. A unique and unforgettable golf experience. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Jam. And Star Protection. Get your property threat and risk assessment, then protection for your home or business, for your concert or special event, like the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California.
Yes, indeed. Continuing his tour across the globe, covering the men's and the women's majors, it's the executive editor of Golf World, the senior writer for Golf Digest. You can find him at golfdigest.com, author Vision 54 Trilogy. Welcome back to the show, Ron.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Daniel.
It's always good talking with Ron Syrak. You can follow him at Ron Syrak on Twitter for insight that you may not get anywhere else. You know, you're at the PGA Championship at Oak Hill, and we're watching right now on TNT. It'll go to CBS in a little bit. Earlier in the week, Phil Mickelson said that one day he would like to play against Tiger Woods when they're both playing their best golf. Now, last week, Tiger Woods, I don't know, he won at Firestone by amazing number of strokes, and Phil Mickelson comes off two great wins, one, of course, at the Open, and, of course, the Scottish Open. Today, I think, last time I checked, Tiger Woods was 3 over through 8, and Phil Mickelson was 5 over through 12. These guys are not playing their best golf. Who are they?
Yeah, you know, we've been waiting 15 years for Tiger and Mickelson to have their sort of Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus duel in the sun moment, and it's not happened. And then we thought for a while that maybe Tiger and Rory McIlroy would have their great duel in the sun Sunday shootout, and it hasn't happened. I'm sort of thinking, I look at the leaderboard now, and I think we may get a duel in the sun moment on Sunday, but it might be Adam Scott and Justin Rose who are two guys who very quietly this year are emerging to finally be playing to the level that we've been waiting for them to play for a decade.
Yeah, and a lot of people say they have the best golf swings, both Justin Rose, one of your favorite swings, and Adam Scott. It's truly beautiful to watch them play. I do have to ask you, and I know this has been talked about in ad nauseum, Tiger Woods, I mean, he was playing beautiful golf last week at Firestone. Amazing. And now he's painful to watch. And Phil Mickelson, painful to watch. What gives with these two guys?
Well, here's what Tiger Woods has proven to us over the last 2 years. He's won 8 tournaments over the last 2 years. Well, 6 of those are on 5 golf courses that he's won a total of 33 of his 79 victories in, you know. And last week it was at Firestone, which he dominated. Well, he's proven to us he can win at Firestone and Bay Hill and Doral and Torrey Pines at Muirfield Village. But what he hasn't done is prove that he can do it in a major championship. It's been 5 years now. It looks like now it's going to be 5 full years after this tournament. With Tiger, I think it's a question of confidence. I think that his confidence has been shaken. That sense that of inevitability hostility and invincibility is gone in both his mind and the minds of his opponents. In Mickelson, I think it's more a matter of the fact that he's been out here for more than two decades, and it's just really become increasingly hard for him to maintain his focus for four consecutive days the way he used to.
Yeah, and he's probably tired. I mean, he does so much. He budgets an hour of his day to sign autographs. He actually plans that out. It's in his work day, his schedule. He schedules that, and he's quite an amazing person. He gives so much back, and what he and Amy do with charities, it's truly amazing. So I guess what we're looking at here is Tiger Woods is comfortable on certain courses, but not comfortable yet with his golf swing. That seems to be the message I'm getting from the pundits, the commentators, the people who've played the game, who are watching him every move, every shoulder turn, every arm, everything he does, that he's not playing golf, he's playing swing, and he's still thinking way too much about
his swing. I had a friend, a guy I went to high school with many, many years ago, and sent me an email and said, Tiger's problem is he's got the soul of Arnold Palmer, and he's trying to be Jack Nicklaus. And I think there's a lot of truth in that Tiger was, when I first saw him, one of the greatest field players I ever saw. And over the years, he's been increasingly more technical, and he's tried to be more like Jack than like Arnold or Seve. I think Tiger played his better golf when he was more free-swinging and just a field player and not a technical player. I'm not entirely sure how he got to where he is, but one of the things that happens under pressure is you revert to your bad habits, you revert to your old swing. And that seems to be what happened to Tiger when he gets to the major championships. He can master the swing and own the swing and control the swing in the regular tour events. But when he gets to the majors, he falls back into some of his old bad habits.
Right. When he really is comfortable on a course, he's not so worried about his swing. When he's in a major, he's worried about the course, he's worried about his swing. But you're absolutely right, because when you used to watch him recover from shots and he had to do the Bubba Watson creative eye, imagining how he could accomplish his goal and thinking it, not really thinking it, I don't mean that, I mean seeing it in the imagination and then making it become reality, that was the exciting part about Tiger. He could be in the other fairway, he could be just about anywhere, and somehow you knew he's going to recover. And that was watching Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I think that he still is at his best when he's got those shots that you never practice, those kind of shots that you just have to make up on the spot, because that's when his true genius comes through and he reverts to being the great field player. But, here's the other odd thing, Danielle, that's going on with him. 2 days in a row now, on Thursday, he ended his round with a double bogey. On Friday, he ended his round with a bogey. The guy who was one of the greatest closers of all time now has trouble closing out rounds of golf. And if you look even this year in some tournaments that he won, at Torrey Pines, he shot 39 on the back nine on Sunday. At Doral, he came within a yard of the ball rolling back off the green into the water. It's the belief system is not the same. That's what I keep coming back to. If Adam Scott and Justin Rose, if their belief system has finally caught up to their talent and they finally realize and trust and believe in how good they really are, I think for Tiger, that belief system is going the other direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to see the way Adam Scott and Justin Rose are playing. They're two friends that encourage each other, but they're competitors on the course, and it's really marvelous. One thing we need to talk about, too, is something you wrote about. As viewers, we love a birdie fest. I mean, seeing those precise shots, received perfectly by the golf course that's so receptive and just taking them, and it's almost like watching those trick shots. Artists, when they hit those perfect and everything just drops exactly where it's supposed to go and it stays there. But major championship setups are not supposed to be birdie fests. They're supposed to be really, really, really hard and very difficult for par. And you wrote a great article in, and it's at golfdigest.com. This is Ron Cyrek, great author and great writer. Tell us, is this a major failure?
No, no. You know, I mean, the one thing you can't control, there's no sport as whimsical and as golf. You know, you can't control the weather. And the fact is, we had an enormous amount of rain early in the week, right up into yesterday morning, and the course is just so soft right now. You hit drives, and they take one bounce and stop. And you hit, and I'm seeing balls land on greens yesterday, in particular, land on greens and not move at all. You know, which you never see in a major. You just can't control that. And when that happens, it happens. You know, one of the things I love about the British Open is the RNA. Doesn't freak out if somebody shoots 18 under on St. Andrews because it happens to be a calm week and there's no wind blow. Because they know if it's not a calm week, a five over is going to win. You know, and that sort of variability in the game is should be considered part of the game. If the conditions make it turn into a birdie fest, you still got to hit the shot, you know. But if the conditions make it where par is a good number, you still got to hit the shot. It's just all about executing out there. And it's in no way a failure or a slight of the tournament if people are shooting 63, 64, and 65.
Yeah, and Jason Duffner, he admitted when he almost shot the course record 62 with that final putt. It was really wonderful to see. I mean, it's like, somehow I just knew it wasn't going to drop. And I felt like he knew it wasn't going to because he was so nervous about making history.
Yeah, and all those people who have been saying for over the years that Jason Duffner doesn't have a pulse and that, you know, he's always just Duffnering out there. And, well, he showed yesterday that he's a human being like everybody else because his final two shots of that 63 were two horrible shots. I mean, it was just a horrible putt for birdie to get to the 62, and then he almost missed the 18-incher after that.
Yeah.
He was feeling the pressure.
Yeah, and this is a tweet from Ron Cyrak, okay? Oak Hill played to 72.196 average, first 36 holes of PGA champ, 6 eagles and 827 birdies, but 1,128 bogeys and 187 higher. Now, what I couldn't help but think was, TV doesn't show us those bad ones, right? They focus on the birdies.
Yeah, you know, and we tend to look at the leaderboard and say, wow, guys are going really, really low. But you know, the fact is, there's a lot of guys who aren't going really, really low. It's a demanding setup out there. And what I love about this course is the back nine has three of the five easiest holes on the golf course, and it ends with the two hardest holes on the golf course. And I think that sets up for what could be a pretty exciting finish.
Sunday finish is going to be very exciting, and it would be something to see Justin Rose, Adam Scott. You know, but at the same time, I just have this feeling that somebody's going to come out of the pack and just completely throw us off. I don't know who.
Well, you know what Danielle, what strikes me about it, I look at the leaderboard, and I feel like I've seen this leaderboard at every major so far this year. You look at the names, Adam Scott, Justin Rose, Heinrich Stenson, Steve Stricker, who else is up there?
Matt Kuchar.
Sergio Garcia, Matt Kuchar. I mean, those guys are on the leaderboard every major.
Yeah, and
I thought coming in that we might get another, you know, in Scott and Rose, we had two first-time major winners this year. And my feeling coming in was we might get another one of those. Jason Duffner fits that category, Matt Kuchar. Fits that category, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get a breakthrough winner this week.
And what about Steve Stricker? I mean, wouldn't that be something?
The first part-time player since Ben Hogan to win a major championship.
Part-time, right? There were a couple of things that happened in the world of rules that was interesting with Woody Austin and carrying 15 club. Phil almost forgetting to register, and Angel Cabrera, did he forget to bring his scorecard? I was confused about that.
Yeah, you know, well, with Woody Austin, there's nothing like a good old Rule 4-4 controversy to get your heart racing, you know. But it's funny. Every time I see a player with too many clubs in the bag, I see there's like a half dozen people who are at fault there. It starts with the player. It starts with the caddy. You know, a lot of starters on the first tee will remind you, you know, hey, count your clubs. And I think that's that's a pretty good thing, you know, to do that.
Yeah.
But this has certainly been the year of the rule competition. It seems like we've had one of those in every major so far, starting with Tiger's drop at the Masters.
That's right. That one was huge, and I think that was one of the reasons. That's when Tiger's ship started to sink at the majors.
Yeah.
He actually looked very confident at the Masters until that moment. What about Phil forgetting to register? I don't understand that.
Well, you know, this has happened. There was one year on the LPGA where there were two players, they're Korean players. They won LPGA tournaments and, because of that, qualified for the U.S. Open. But the fact is, if you're qualified for a tournament, you still have to do the paperwork. You still have to register. You know, and happened to Julie Yingster one year at a tournament. She showed up at the tournament, and they said, "No, Julie, you never registered." Because I mean, that's the only way that the tournament officials know if they have enough spots.
I see.
I mean, you know, you may be qualified for the tournament, but you still got to tell them you're coming.
Yeah. Okay.
And with Cabrera, you know, the whole thing with the scorecard is you've got to sign your scorecard before you leave the score area. And if you walk off with your scorecard and haven't signed it before you leave the score area, you are considered not to have signed your scorecard.
Okay. It just seems
Michelle Wee got disqualified on one of those.
Yes, I remember. And then didn't he withdraw because of a wrist injury?
I believe that's what it was. He did WD.
Maybe it was his score. You never know. Yeah. But there are a couple of really neat things that happened this week. I want to get to that TV rights. This is interesting. It's almost like the blue states and the red states in politics. The way the USGA is going to Fox and PGA, you know, of America, it's funny. But Tom Watson got an oak tree named after him. I didn't know that happened at Oak Hill.
Well, you know, if you're gonna name a tree after anybody, Watson's a good guy. Yeah, the traditions around this place are amazing, and it's funny. I don't know why more people don't mention Oak Hill when they talk about great golf courses, because it really is. And I was here for a Ryder Cup in '95, and it was a great event. But this is a pretty cool golf course.
Yeah, Walter Hagen, Sam Snead, Ben Hogan, Gene Sarazen, with Snead winning by 7 over Hogan in 1941, and then in 42, Hogan sets the course record of 64. I mean, this course started, I don't know, I think the members incorporated in 1905, bought the land, and it's beautiful, it's gorgeous, it's spectacular. And another thing that happened, the PGA Tour Wives Association, you've written some great articles, some great pieces about what they've done. The women got together there, built a house for the Giletti family?
Yeah, they do a Habitat for Humanity thing, and it really is an amazing organization. And the primary charitable organization that benefits from them is Blessings in a Backpack, which provides food for needy children to have on the weekend.
They do that here. Yes.
Yeah. And I know the Justin and Kate Rose Foundation is also very involved with that. But the Habitat for Humanity program is another worthwhile project. But the Wives, you know, what they really bring to it is attention. They bring media attention. They go out and they do something like this. Local TV, local papers cover it, and it helps generate local dollars for fun.
Yeah, it was great to see the 65 women from the wives of PGA of America players and, of course, PGA Tour players, all with the hammers and up on the, you know, scaffolding. And really, I've built a house before like that with your hands. It's a real great feeling to have done that and then to be able to turn it over to somebody. There's nothing like it at all. They've also got the fans involved in picking the hole location on number 15, the fan choice. Did you see the four pin placements we got to choose from?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, I mean, I have mixed feelings about that whole thing. I guess it's okay because you're giving them the, you're giving them reasonable choices, so they're not going to put it on the side of a slope.
Right.
But I think any way that you get the fans more involved in the sport, it's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay, well, it generated 200,000 hits. I thought that was amazing, and 80,000 votes. Now, speaking of hits and votes, and TNT wasn't the place I expected to find golf, but of course, occasionally TNT does, and now it's going to be CBS later. If TNT stops showing you golf, go to CBS because it'll be there. But what about the USGA moving all of its events to Fox?
Yeah, you know, the first thing that was surprised people about that was the timing of the announcement. The announcement came out on the Wednesday night. I was at dinner, and when I got the email, it popped in, and just strange that the owner of one major championship would announce they would change their new TV deal on the eve of another major championship, and a lot of people were taken off guard by the timing of the announcement. They're going to a network that hasn't done golf. They're going to somebody who's proven that they can do sports. Fox does a lot. Baseball does football. And what the USGA is saying is they think that Fox will bring them a wider, broader audience. And they think that Fox might bring some innovation to how golf is broadcast. You know, the answers to that question we're only going to see in 2015 when they start televising golf. But I think that everybody in the industry sort of thinks that it's never a bad thing when you bring new money to the table, because the more bidders that you have, it sort of like, you know, raises the bar for everybody in terms of dollars. So you caught people by surprise because USGA and NBC have had a relationship for 20 years.
Yeah, it was surprising to me. Speaking of television, you're going to be on television on Golf Channel. It's all before the Solheim Cup, so let me see now. You're going to do Golf World Monday as you wrap up on Sunday, the event, and then you're going to put together the magazine Golf World that's going to come out on Wednesday, the digital edition, and then it comes out paper in my mailbox on Thursday. But before that, you've got to fly to Florida to be on Golf Channel to do Morning Drive.
Yeah, I'm gonna co-host on Morning Drive on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and help them set up the their coverage of the Solheim Cup for the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And, I really love the fact that I've noticed this year that I think that the Golf Channel has really stepped up their attention on women's golf.
Yes.
And they had me in for 2 days before the Women's Open at Savannah to co-host Morning Drive to talk about the Women's U.S. Open. And I think that I think that they're starting to realize that they have, under contract, a really undervalued and underappreciated property in women's golf. To me, the finish of the Women's British Open that I was at last week was as good of a tournament as I've been at all year. To have Stacey Lewis finish birdie on the old course to win a tournament was pretty special.
Yes, and a beautiful indeed cover for Golf World this week with Stacey Lewis on the cover at St. Andrews. I can't think of anything more powerful than that, as I tweeted. Now, and then you go to Colorado for the Solheim Cup. So, hey, the Magical Mystery Tour continues.
One more week, and then I get a week at home before I go to the Deutsche Bank tournament. But I have since the first week of June, I think I've done 7 major championships.
It's truly amazing. Well, I hope you go to the Evian. That would be a real capper. Then again, you probably want to see home for a while too. Ron Cyrek, can we get together again next week for the Solheim Cup?
Absolutely, Danielle, anytime.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll be back right after this. We're going to India with Shaili Chopra. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
Star Protection Agency, providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Licensed and bonded. Property guard and patrol services. Loss prevention. Star Protection provides the security you need with the industry-leading internet-based reporting system. One call does it all. 532-3911 or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection, locally owned with people you trust.
It was our office manager's birthday, and she loves golf. So we decided to get together for golf at Poipu Bay, and we invited a bunch of our customers. It turned into a party. The clubhouse restaurant made a fabulous lunch. The customers had a great time and met the people they give orders to. They were golf buddies long before the 19th hole. Golf at Poipu Bay. Family, friends, business, and fun at Poipu Bay Golf Course on Kauai's South Shore. Spectacular. Call 742-8711 and book your tee time, get together, or event at Poipu Bay. That's 742-8711. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Gem.
The new Acura RDX features an incredibly efficient V6 engine with 273 horsepower. Yet the RDX has incredible nimble driving characteristics. And let's not forget, it's also equipped with standard power moonroof, Bluetooth phone connectivity, and a 360-watt 7-speaker premium audio system. It also has standard leather seats. Unfortunately, they don't make any sound. Test drive the new RDX today.
Visit your local Acura dealer today. Luxury, intelligently priced.
The new Acura RLX's true sense of luxury comes from its unique technologies. From the Juuli LED headlights and precision all-wheel steer, to its available 14-speaker Krell premium audio system, the RLX takes everything you love about a luxury sedan and makes it even more luxurious. The all-new RLX from Acura. Luxury taken to a whole new level.
Visit your local Acura dealer today. Luxury, intelligently priced.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
I am so thrilled to introduce you to Shailee Chopra. She is an author. She is a television host on NDTV in India, on ET Now, author and poet, published in the Times of India, Indian Express. Awarded the prestigious Ramnath Goenka Award for Excellence in Business Journalism at the Indian Express RNG Awards. Among others, she has won many awards in journalism excellence. Her business golf show was originally called Business on Course. She won Best Show Award. She's now doing the show called Tea Time with Shailee Chopra. Her book is Birdies in Business, and she's just started golfingindian.com. Welcome to the show. It's so good to meet you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Absolutely. Your book includes interviews with Gary Player and Colin Montgomery, India's CEOs, Making It Big and Playing Golf for Leisure. Why did you decide? I mean, here you are, a woman in a very male-oriented society, from what I understand of India. Very, you know, man is most powerful. And here you are, a woman in golf, in business golf. That you're incredible.
Thanks so much for all that, all those wonderful words ahead of my introduction. But really speaking, you know, the Indian golfing scene is more male dominated, even as India is becoming very, very accepting of women achievers. But the male dominated golfing scene is one where we were expecting to see some change. We're hoping that that will, within the next few years, as one tends to see a change in the golfing landscape in the country. But for me, it's been a very exciting journey because I started out playing golf when I was just 5 years old. My dad's in the Indian Air Force. He flies jets, and he's an avid golfer. So when I started out with him, I realized it was such a wonderful sport. It's fashionable. Women can really enjoy it. They can actually sort of play at the same level as men. And I would think it's such a pity that, you know, women haven't entered this field in a bigger way, especially in my own country. So when I grew into a journalist, Air Force was focusing on India's top CEOs, global guys like Warren Buffett, Bill Gates. But I often felt that all of these spectacular people played golf. And that was something that was still missing with India's CEOs. So I think once I realized some of them started playing the game, I quickly latched onto the concept and introduced India's first golf show and then India's first business golf column to converge golf with executive thinking, executives across the country and even overseas. So, you know, the things that you said about the book, Birdies in Business, that's the first such book ever done in the country, which are basically lessons in business and in golf from India's top CEOs.
Yeah, it's great. I was watching an interview of you with Shiv Kapoor. At one point, of course, he was leading the Open Championship this year with six birdies over those seven holes. And he said, if nothing else, I'll be the top Indian to finish this Open. Which was, he's absolutely he's adorable. He said to you in the interview, it was interesting to him that the guys relax playing golf. He says, that's the last thing I do on a golf course is relax. Right?
You bet, especially when you're making your millions off it, right?
Yes.
So I guess for Shiv Kapoor, for that moment, pressure actually worked in his favor. Even though, you know, when you're having a drink with him, he's such a wonderful guy. He's not under pressure. He's actually pretty chilled out. And he's a cricket lover. He incidentally was the guy who introduced and launched my book, Birdies in Business, in the Indian capital of Delhi. And Shiv over the years has been, you know, one of those mascots of the game who tends to have a very endearing approach towards youngsters who want to come into play. So, you know, there's this really interesting story I remember Shiv sharing with me, saying that when he went to a desert in India, people had never seen a golf club. And the fact that it's made with metal, there's a tiny golf ball that has dimples on it. Everything was alien to the villagers where he had gone for a wedding, and this was in the desert.
Wow.
He looked, you know, he looked rather busy practicing because he had a tournament coming up. And he said, hell, if I don't find a green or a fairway, I'm going to play off the sand. So he was busy practicing. And then suddenly there was a crowd around him trying to wonder, in a nation that's obsessed with cricket and a bat and a ball, what is this strange-looking hook-shaped club and how is he managing to hit it? So, you know, the curiosity factor was huge among people who've never been even exposed to a golf club. But the interesting part is that in India, if you can be great at cricket, you really know what a sort of ball connect means. So that way, I do hope that when golf grows to the masses in the country, they will probably see such similarities between the way the cricket swing works.
Yes.
And the connect, you know, is that hopefully that will be a reason for golf to become more and more popular.
Well, you have Arjun Atwal, Shiv Kapoor, Jeev Milka Singh, all of these men have made it into the European Tour, the PGA Tour, into the global stage of golf. How are women? I understand, like, there's a 15-year-old, Meghna Ball. Her first amateur victory was at the Western Indian Ladies Amateur. She was 15. She turned pro in 2011. Are more women getting into the game like you have?
Well, I wish.
Oh, have we lost? We may have lost Shailee Chopra. That's a shame. She is such a dynamo. I know there are some women in India who are really taking on golf, and it's exciting to see. It's like the Executive Women's Golf Association chapter that we formed here in Hawaii, exactly like Birdies in Business, like her book. You can find it at Amazon. It's called Birdies in Business. It includes these interviews with Gary Player and Colin Montgomery and India's CEOs making it big and playing golf for leisure and making networking connections. And as Shailee was talking about, you know, it's amazing the networking that you can do. And I think we have her back with us now. Shailee, are you there?
Absolutely, I am. And I was sort of raising the issues around women's golf in India. I'm very proud to say that, you know, since 2007, there's been a turning point for women professional golf in the country. And more women are playing on the local tour. But it's not still a number that one can be very proud of because the number is still small. So we're still talking about, well, 12, 13, 14, 15 women and not in hundreds or, you know, not even 50 women playing professional golf. But I think it will change. I constantly remind people that in India, the cycle of the game doesn't start as a sport first. Golf is lifestyle first in this country. And I think as people start latching onto the idea that golf is, you know, a sport that you can enjoy, you can spend time with your family, and you can become professional at it and even earn money off it is something that I hope will latch on among women. Because the prize money is still small. The sponsors for women are also just, you know, you could literally count them on your fingers. So in that sense, I think there's also a need to urge people to come and pay more attention to women's golf in emerging markets rather than being obsessed with how India and China are global markets for real estate of golf or for just its professional players, you know, among the men.
Yeah, and I understand the Indian Pitch and Putt Union, that kind of a nursery where the children go, that's starting to grow as well in India. It's very exciting what's happening and very exciting to talk to you. I can't wait to get to know more about you, to read your book, and hopefully see more interviews that you've done via the internet. And your website is golfingindian.com. Shailee Chopra is pioneering India's first golf website, taking a golf into the genre of golf TV. She created India's first dedicated golf website, and just really exciting work that you're doing. Shailee, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks very much, Daniel. Good to join you.
Good. Aloha. We will talk again, and we'll be back after we take a break. We're going to be talking with Ed Kagayama. He is the regional director of Billy Casper Golf, and they're putting together a very important event. It's on Monday on the 12th, and it raises money for the Wounded Warrior Project. We'll talk to him right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Hoipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Hoipu Bay.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism now affects 1 in 88 children in the United States. Early diagnosis for autism makes all the difference. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please join me at the Els for Autism Golf Challenge this year. We are playing great courses throughout the United States. Fundraise $13,000 or more, and you can join me and some of my friends at the finale in Las Vegas. Thank you very much.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
It's the Golf Club. Visit our website at www.radiogolfclub.com. You can hear previous archived shows. Just hit the listen button and pick the show you want to hear. Email Danielle with your thoughts and requests. Contact us about advertising and check out our sponsor links. That's www.radiogolfclub.com. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
And I just want to welcome all the folks who are responsible for making Poipu Bay Golf Course one of the most beautiful in the islands. Welcome to Hawaii. If you'd like to play a round of golf at Poipu Bay, there's a 10:50, a 12:30, and a 1:30 open. It is going to be a little bit wet today. We've got a mostly cloudy day, a chance of some thunderstorms. This is coming from the Big Island side, from Maui toward Oahu, heading toward Kauai. I'm not sure if it's raining there yet. But if you get out early, you know, you'll have a great round, and there's 25% off the sale rack once you're in the pro shop. Go check it out. All right, we've got a really big event. And to tell us a little bit about it, we're doing it here in Hawaii too, raising money for Wounded Warriors Project. He is the Hawaii and Asia Pacific Regional Manager of Billy Casper Golf, the Golf Program Director at Punahou School. He oversees all levels of golf program at Punahou School. He's the PGA member, of course, and General Manager of Ka'anapali Golf Resort, VP of Business Development at 808golf.com. He's on the board of Lana Kila Pacific and Hawaii Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. We're talking today about the third annual world's largest golf outing to benefit the Wounded Warrior Project. Welcome to the show, Ed Kageyama.
Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning. How's the weather on beautiful Maui?
A little rainy. A little gray.
A little gray. That would be Gil and Tropical Storm Henriette, still tracking south of the islands, but just blowing up some moisture. So expected to be like that for most of the weekend. So, but on Monday, it's going to be beautiful, absolutely fabulous, on Kauai at Puakea, at Bayview on Oahu, at Ka'anapali on Maui. You're putting on the third annual world's largest golf outing. Tell us about it.
Sure. For Billy Casper Golf, this has been a corporate initiative for us through our office, in our headquartered office in Washington, D.C. And this was brought to us as, you know, the organization and our company, you know, had a little brainchild about fundraising, and we thought it was a great way for us to help a great cause. And we got our entire company involved. And this year we have about 100, over 110 courses out of the about 150. We'll be hosting basically almost a simultaneous shotgun tournament, simultaneous meaning on the same day, but not at the same time because of time zones. But we'll all be doing this world's largest golf outing on Monday, August 12th. So all the courses are on the same day, going to be having shotguns, all raising funds for world's largest golf. For the Wounded Warriors.
Wounded Warrior Project, yes. And so this is a shotgun. It's 8:30. This is the Royal. Okay, you're playing at the Royal Ka'anapali course for $50. You don't get to play the Royal Ka'anapali course for $50. Puakea, shotgun start 8:30, $50. Bayview Golf Park in Kaneohe on Oahu, 8 o'clock, $30.
And that includes your golf, some prizes, small lunch, and a contribution to Wounded Warriors.
Exactly. And say you don't have a gin, okay? You don't have one. You don't need to have one. This is a fundraiser. This isn't about competing for, you know, the best. This is a fundraiser, so you don't have to have a USGA handicap. It's being played in 28 states. It's open to golfers of all abilities. I suppose we'll be picking up our ball if we're not really good, right?
Yeah, just for fun, all for fun, and for a great cause.
Yeah, all the donations and part of the event proceeds benefit the WWP, National Nonpartisan Organization that honors and empowers Wounded Warriors, some of whom will be playing in the world's largest golf outing. I understand that a whole lot of money was raised last year. How much, Ed?
Over $400,000.
Wow. That's great.
And that was, last year was just about 8,000 players, about 100 courses. And so we're hoping this year with more courses, more players, that we'll be able to raise more money.
More money. The mission of the Wounded Warrior Project is to honor and empower wounded warriors. And what they do is the purpose is to raise awareness, to enlist the public's aid for the needs of the injured service members, to help injured servicemen and women aid and assist each other, and to provide unique direct programs and service to meet their needs. It's a national nonpartisan organization. It's really great that the Billy Casper Golf Organization, with so many golf courses across the country, decided to do this, to jump in. Again, this is on Monday, and you need to register online today. Is today the last day to register?
Yeah, today at noon is when we cut off the registration. Just go to worldslargestgolfouting.com to go ahead and register. And, you know, we have, not every location has this, but we are proud to say that we have actually two Wounded Warriors participating at Bayview.
At Bayview?
Yes, at Bayview.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And the Bayview shotgun is at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, 8:30 at Puakea, 8:30 at Ka'anapali at the Royal Course. You've got some partners, the LPGA, the PGA National Resort and Spa, the Sea Pines Resort, Fila Golf, Kauai Visitors Bureau, Echo, Club Golf, Myrtle Beach Holiday, Sun Valley Resort, Mission Hills Resort in China. They're all partnering in this effort by Billy Casper Golf. Really great.
Yes, it's a great company initiative, and we're hoping to get industry behind it. And we're looking to really raise a lot of funds for this very worthy cause.
Yeah, you do so much. You know, when I did your introduction, Punahou School, the golf program. How do you get so many great players to come out of Punahou? What is your secret? What's your secret, Ed?
Well, it's really, for me, it's creating a meaningful program where, you know, the kids find, they learn a lot, they have a great experience, and it's something for them to draw on for their future lives. And it's not just about golf. It's about, you know, meeting new people, creating relationships, going on this journey of ours, and, you know, seeing what we can do together as a group. And, you know, the kids are great. They work hard. They're dedicated to their craft. And, you know, they have a shared vision of our success, not their playing success, but just success of the team and in anything that we want to do. And that relationship carries on, and I still keep in contact with all my players. And, you know, golf itself is such a small community, but when we have a little team like we do at Puno, that creates a nice family, golf family for us.
Who are some of the, and I don't mean to say this like to let other, you know, to leave out some of the players, but who are your stars right now at Punahou?
Well, this year, you know, Allison Corpuz, Meryl Galdiano coming back. Kristen Lay is having a great summer. We'll have Michael Leon, Jie Li coming back. On the boys side, PJ Samir will be coming back. We just had Kalana graduate, Zachary Brownfell graduate, Ryan Lloyd graduate, and Casey Komodo just graduated.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about that because you've had so many graduates. Do you have a younger team now that you're building with?
On the boys side, we have some sophomores that were on the team last year, Kyle Supa, who's returning, and then we have some eighth graders who'll be moving up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll go through our tryouts is really look at the team size that we want to carry. Because last year we took 9 boys to the state, and I think we took 8 girls to the state tournament, which is pretty large.
And it's big contingent.
Yeah. So we'll look at the team size and see what we can handle, and, you know, we'll go from there.
Exciting. Do you do things with your kids' outings other than golf to create those bonds, or is it mostly golf-focused events or social activities that you do?
No, we'll go bowling.
Ah, see?
We did an off-island trip during the year. You know, we'll go eat. My alumnus and current team members get together, and they go to the Friday food truck events down in Kakaako.
Oh, yes, Eat the Street.
Yeah, we'll go do that. I'm missing, they're getting together for a dinner that I'll be missing because I'll be on Kauai. But, yeah, we get together as often as we can, and, you know, a bunch of us are scattered right now through the summer and college. But,
yeah,
we try to get together as much as we can.
That's nice. That's nice. It really, that way you're not always on purpose, and I mean that, like, you know, always thinking about the golf and what your purpose is in the game. You've got some relaxation, some social time where you can just kind of play around and get to know each other outside of how you react on the course. And
all
I think
right.
That makes everybody more relaxed when you're then in the team moment. You get to know each other, your strengths and your weaknesses, and then kind of encourage each other in ways that you may not understand out, you know, just on the golf course. You get to know the person.
Yeah, you know, my focus is when people say play golf, my really focus is to play.
Yeah.
And that, you know, first and foremost, we got to have fun.
Would you get Tiger to come over and take a lesson? I mean, you know, I don't want it to be a Tiger-dominated world, but it would be nice to see him be more consistent and, you know, be in the mix. It's like he's either at the top or he's at the bottom of the leaderboard, and I'm not understanding this at all. What's your take?
Well, you know, I think he starts working on stuff, and then, you know, he's always tweaking.
Yeah.
And so he finally gets it to a point where it feels good, and he tweaks it, and then he has to drop off a little bit, work on it, tweak, you know.
Yeah.
Then gets to that point, and then he'll win again, and he'll tweak again, and that's how we golfers are, I think.
Is that it? You guys tinker constantly, right?
Constantly.
Yeah.
We're always looking for another club. And
right. See, yeah. I get a club that works for me. I'm like, I'm holding on to this baby.
I was in the store yesterday looking for another driver.
You're what drives the R&D department at all. You know, what club do you prefer? I don't want to say the wrong one.
Right now, Nike Culvert.
Okay, so you.
Yeah. So I'm torn between the tour head or the performance head.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's wonderful hearing you talk about things like this. So let's get back to purpose. The reason we're here, Billy Casper Golf, all the Billy Casper Golf managed courses in Hawaii and across the country are hosting the third annual. It's the world's largest golf outing, and it's Monday, and you really should go. And, I mean, for $50, 8:30 shotgun at Royal Ka'anapali, 8:30 shotgun at Puakea, and the 8 o'clock shotgun at Bayview, $30. And Wounded Warriors, too, will be there at Bayview. Let's raise some money for the Wounded Warrior Project. Right, Ed?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we actually have teams raising money on their own.
Oh, tell us about that.
There are actually some players that are playing at Ka'anapali. There's about 8 of them that are challenging each other to go raise more funds on their own. And they're probably close to maybe $3,000 now.
Nice. That's good. It's almost like betting, right? Betting against each other.
Yeah.
I can raise more money than you.
Yeah.
Anytime wagering gets in there, it really gets the juices flowing. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ed Kageyama. We need to talk more often.
Daniel, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll be back. Jeff King is our next guest. Jeff King is a caddy. Ha, ha, ha. He's not just a caddy. He's a king-made jerky. Have you heard of king-made jerky? If you haven't heard about it yet, well, you're going to hear about it now. But you're going to hear a lot about king-made jerky. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
The new Acura RDX features an incredibly efficient V6 engine with 273 horsepower. Yet the RDX has incredible nimble driving characteristics. And let's not forget, it's also equipped with standard power moonroof, Bluetooth phone connectivity, and a 360-watt 7-speaker premium audio system. It also has standard leather seats. Unfortunately, they don't make any sound. Test drive the new RDX today.
Visit your local Acura dealer today. Luxury, intelligently priced.
The new Acura RLX's true sense of luxury comes from its unique technologies. From the Juuli LED headlights and precision all-wheel steer, to its available 14-speaker Krell premium audio system, the RLX takes everything you love about a luxury sedan and makes it even more luxurious. The all-new RLX from Acura. Luxury taken to a whole new level.
Visit your local Acura dealer today. Luxury, intelligently priced.
In the security business, trust is earned over time. That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting-edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star. Star Protection Agency.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf.
Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
Welcome. It's the last major on the men's tour of 2013. It's the PGA Championship at Oak Hill. It's a beautiful golf course in Rochester, New York. And right now, I just checked the leaderboard. Let's see now. Tiger Woods is 2 over through 13, and Phil Mickelson is 8 over through 16. I only mention them because, you know, we always talk about them. Tiger's supposed to win his, you know, major. I don't think this is going to be happening because, well, the leaders haven't teed off yet. Jason Duffner's in the lead, 9 under for the tournament so far, and he hasn't even started playing yet. Adam Scott, Matt Kuchar, Jim Furyk, Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, Robert Garrigues with his new putter, Steve Stricker. Wouldn't that be something? Webb Simpson, he's found his game. Martin Keimer. Wow. Charlie Hoffman. Marcus Frazier. Jonas Blix. Sergio Garcia. They're all at the top of the leaderboard. Yeah, it's really exciting Saturday and Sunday. But we're going to talk right now with somebody who might know a little thing about this sort of thing. He is a PGA Tour caddy. He was with the LPGA for 13 years. He caddied for players including Christy Kerr. His name is Jeff King, and he founded something called King Made Jerky. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks, Danielle. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can I ask you a caddy question?
Absolutely.
Okay, now let's say you're partnered up with somebody who has kind of an odd way of playing golf, and you're more straightforward, and I'm talking specifically about, you know, Keegan Bradley. He's got kind of quirky ways of, you know, doing his pre-shot routine, and his pace is a little bit slower. And then there's Tiger Woods, who's, I don't know, seems very focused. He's probably got a 20-second pre-shot routine. Does that throw off a player's performance at all, being paired with certain people?
Some players, yeah, for sure. I think more slower players, I think, bothers a lot of guys, especially the faster players. Like you're mentioning, Keegan kind of gets in there and gets after it, and he has a lot of moves, and he's always moving. Certain guys, you know, they will mention, you know, like this guy's taking forever or something like that. But
yeah.
I think it depends on their own, the way they're playing also. You know, if they're catching some bad breaks or not hitting some good shots here and there, I think that stuff grows on them throughout the round. But if they're playing well, then nothing bothers them. You know,
yeah.
They're so good and so strong mentally. So, it does. Yes and no. It just depends on the player, I guess.
I like that answer because it's true. When you're playing well, nothing will bother you. But if you're kind of off or just kind of trying to find your place, anything, it's just going to go south.
A chirping bird's going to bother you.
I mean, yes.
Sometimes it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's the other player or, you know, the spectator dropped the can in the trash can and they heard, you know, it grows, you know, throughout the day if you catch a bad break here or there. It's just definitely, everything gets to you.
And so, as a caddy, you know, anybody who's like, and in any way codependent, enabling, wanting to help, and I don't mean that negatively, I mean that completely positively, how do you as a caddy learn to help these guys?
I think staying focused on what you're trying to accomplish and what you're doing, you know, even if things aren't going your way, you know, it's just a little reminder here and there, like, hey, you know, let's get into what we're doing, or, you know, we can't control, you know, we control what we're doing. So let's, you know, let's get a little more focused on that, you know. And sometimes, you know, a little bit too much of that is over the top. So you got to kind of pick your spots, you know, when you can see that they're starting to boil over a little bit. You know, you're there to encourage, you know, and you're there to be a helper, you know, like you said. So
yeah.
You know, being around a player long enough when you should be saying stuff and when you just let them go and kind of vent. So, yeah, it takes a little time and learning each other.
Yeah, I bet. You know, it's kind of like a marriage. It's an odd, you get to know each other's strengths and weaknesses. And let me just do this legal ID because I have to do this for the FCC for all these radio stations. KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo. Now, see, for Jeff King, he's got this special deal for Luke List. Luke is his player. Jeff can pull out of the bag a bag of King Made jerky. Tell us about this beef jerky. And on one of the tweets that I saw prior to play, is Tiger Woods was chowing down on some of your King-made jerky?
Yeah, it is what it is right now because it got too big out of control for me to handle, actually. So he ate it last week in Akron, and then this week here at the PGA, I think he had it at the U.S. Open and the British Open in Muirfield as well.
So. Wow. Okay, let's backtrack. Okay, we've got Tiger Woods eating your King-made jerky. You know that's a huge endorsement. How did you start making beef jerky that became so popular on tour?
I didn't do anything on tour. I started making it for Luke and myself back in a couple years ago on a nationwide tour. And I basically did it just because I like beef jerky, and I know, yeah, I didn't do it for really others. I just did it because we had a lot of downtime in the off season, and I just said, hey, I'm going to go get a dehydrator and start messing around with beef jerky. And to be honest with you, the first couple of times I did it, I'd take it out on the road, and, you know, Luke just kind of looked at me, and I'm like, yeah, it's not very good, is it? You know, we're just like, yeah, it was just like, okay, let's go back to the kitchen and try something different, you know? And I started getting into it, you know, because, you know, when you go home, you have a week off or 2 weeks off, it's like, you know, what do you do? Because you just kind of want to stay inside and relax when it's hot out. And I started making some stuff, and Luke would look at me, he's like, hey, this is really good, you know, this is way better than the last one. And then I would come back out, and he would say it again, and then, you know, during rounds, he would eat it, and other beef guys would be like, what is that, you know, and like, yeah, he makes it. So it got to a point where Scott Brown actually came up to us on the range in Miami at a nationwide event, and he didn't even say hi to us, either one of us, and by this time, it's been shared, you know, throughout groups over a month and a half or so. And Scott Brown was now starting to tell people, like, dude, you guys got to try this stuff. So Scott came over to our bag on the range, and he didn't even say hi, nothing. Started unzipping zippers in our bag while Luke and I were working. And we're both, like, looking at him going, really, what are you doing? He's like, where is it? And we're like, are you serious right now? You know, so it got to a point where I was coming home and spending $200-$300 on meat so other guys can eat it. And he goes, no, as he's feeding his face, he goes, yo, sell this stuff. And I looked at him with the goofiest look. I'm like, would you get out of here? And he's like, I'm serious, man. You know, go ahead and, you know, I'm going to ask four or five guys for you. Would you want to sell it? And I said, sure, you know, if guys want to buy it. So long story short, I mean, I really, till this day, haven't asked anybody, one person to buy my beef jerky. And it's gotten to, you know, there's probably about 70 of them out there that over the course of a year and a half that have contacted me one way or another. And I come home and make pounds of beef jerky. So I was at home a couple weeks. I was in Dallas, so a couple weeks before the Byron and the Colonial. I had orders from players and caddies to make 170 pounds of beef jerky.
Wow.
So my kitchen cannot produce 170 pounds of beef jerky in a week. My kitchen, you know. I have four dehydrators that we just kind of, you know, it tinkered around with, and it grew to a point where I go, I got to get another one. So they made an emergency phone call to my parents, and I said, what are you guys doing? They live in Phoenix. And they're like, well, nothing really. You know, I said, okay, I'm getting you a plane ticket for tomorrow. You have to come to Dallas because I need help. And my mom is just like, you, I've lost your mind. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here, but, you know. And so my dad's all into it. You know, he's like, all right, cool, let's go. We got something to do, you know. So
right.
We're cutting meat and we're bagging beef jerky. We're putting people's names on it. My mom is just like, you guys have both lost your mind, you know. In the meantime, my phone is beeping with text messages. Hey, can I get a pound of this and a pound of that? Hey, and I'm like, mom, there's another one. And I was like, mom, there's another one. She's like, what is wrong with these people with beef jerky? And I'm like, I don't know, you know. And until this day, it's just like whenever I go home, I just kind of send a big text message out to everybody saying, hey, I'm going home. If you want jerky, let me know. And then that's how we... That's how it got to this point. And
wow. I love your packaging. King-made jerky. There's this it's a fabulous-looking bull on the front. One has got, he's a flying... What are these, goggles on him?
Yeah, he's a skier.
He's a skier. How silly of me.
Yeah, there's a hunter, a skier, and a golfer, and then there's going to be a couple more flavors that are got some, you know, it's geared toward people who, you know, are active and they like beef jerky. So, the branding company that's taking care of all everything is phenomenal. They're doing a great job. They're brand courier in Dallas. So, we're excited, man. It was totally unintentional. I really didn't have a dream of starting any kind of jerky company, but, you know, we got that, guys, you know, walking around on the PGA Tour asking me when they're going to get it in stores and all this other stuff, you know, like Cooch, it was a point early on in his career, like, you know, when we gonna get it on the shelf? When we going to get it in stores? I look at him, I'm like, what? I didn't go to Georgia Tech, Cooch, you know, I don't know the first thing about anything about selling anything in a store. And then a friend of mine I ran into, I've known for many years, Monterey, we had missed the cut at Pebble Beach, and I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, and he's just like, you know, what's going on? You know, what have you been up to? And I'm like, dude, the craziest thing is happening. And he's like, what's that? And I'm like, I make beef jerky in my kitchen, and I just started ripping off all these. I'm like, there's 50 or 60, you know, at the time, of guys that are buying this stuff from me, and I don't even ask them. And I was like, they all tell each other, and people text me and ask if I can get it. He's like, wow. He's like, that's really cool. He's like, you know what I do, right? And I'm like, yeah, you're in the food business. He's like, no, I know how to get products to market if you want to do it. So he's pretty much, he's been an absolute genius for this whole operation. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, his name's Adam Papazian. There's no way any of this stuff would be going because I'll still be making it in my kitchen. I'm thankful for him every day because I'm over it.
Oh, you're done. You're done making 170 pounds of jerky in the kitchen with mom and dad trying to help you out, right? That's awesome, though. I mean, it's such a great. So far, we've got sweet chili pepper. That's one flavor. We have the classic recipe. That's another flavor. We have buffalo style. That's another flavor, and several more flavors to come. And this, you're hearing the story of a man who is a caddy. That's his job, and he on his spare time he just started making some beef jerky. And at first, his player wasn't all that impressed, but after tinkering in the kitchen, came up with some really good tasting jerky, and now everybody wants it, and he's got his own King made jerky. Jeff King, awesome story. I am so excited to talk to you. This is serendipity. You know, it's like when you meet somebody who he says, you know what I do? I can get your stuff to market. That's amazing.
It didn't register. I just started laughing. I'm like, that's great. You know, like, ha-ha. I'm like, you don't understand what I do. I go home for a week, right? And I'm on, like, my whole day, the week evolves around a cycle. There is no day or night. There's no, it's like stuff has to be cut, stuff has to be marinated, stuff has to be cooked, stuff has to be taken off and changed. And it's like, you don't sleep more than 3 hours at a time, you know?
Wow.
And it was funny. Because at the range at Colonial, I spoke into David. Davis Love also was a big
fan.
Big, huge beef jerky fan. And he came. Apparently, he had heard that I had to make so much, you know, in the previous 2 weeks. And he said, I went up to him and I said, thanks. You know, and I just talked to him for a couple minutes. And he goes, so you've been busy? And I looked at him, and, like, my eyes were bloodshot, and I just started laughing, and he started laughing. He goes, I heard. He goes, I know, man. He goes, you got to fix that. I was like, Davis, I don't sleep more than, like, 3 hours. And it doesn't matter what time of day. I got to wake up at 3:30 in the morning to change stuff. I got to wake up at 3:30 in the morning.
My goodness. But now it's in somebody else's kitchen, right?
Yeah. And I told him, well, yeah, they're making it up in a plant now. You know, it's being mass-produced, I just looked at him. I said, "I just can't wait for some." It's just the support of all the guys. It's overwhelming. I mean, you didn't expect any of it, and I don't ask anybody to do anything, and they all they're behind me so hard. It's phenomenal. I'm so grateful. It's cool.
It's awesome, Jeff King, founder. He made it. It's King made jerky, and pretty soon. I know it's going to be in Hawaii because there's a lot of beef jerky lovers here. Fishermen, hunters, golfers, they'll all want to have your King-made jerky. Jeff King, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Danielle.
Absolutely. We'll be back talking the mental game right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. Dane Gingrich, Coach Dane, in the show, in the clubhouse. After this, my name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
It was our office manager's birthday, and she loves golf. So we decided to get together for golf at Poipu Bay, and we invited a bunch of our customers. It turned into a party. The clubhouse restaurant made a fabulous lunch. The customers had a great time and met the people they give orders to. They were golf buddies long before the 19th hole. Golf at Poipu Bay. Family, friends, business, and fun at Poipu Bay Golf Course on Kauai's South Shore. Spectacular. Call 742-8711 and book your tee time, get together, or event at Poipu Bay. That's 742-8711. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Gem.
Yeah, yeah. A mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
And welcome back in. We're going to talk about, you know, like NB Park. NB, three majors in 1 year. Going for her fourth at St. Andrews. The pressure, the media attention. I mean, it was intense. Remember, she's from Korea. Everybody wants her to succeed. There's national pride at stake. We still have the Evian. That's still another major. Who knows? She may win the Evian with less pressure on her. We don't know. Tiger Woods. Where's Tiger? I don't know. He's something like three over through, you know, it's, or Phil Mickelson. Phil's just tired, I think. But Dane Gingrich, he has something called CoachDane.com. You got to go to it. It's the 1% mindset. His passion for getting people to get rid of their limiting self-beliefs stems from his overwhelming insecurity and fear he lived with while growing up. Does that sound familiar? Welcome to the show, Coach Dane.
How I've missed you. How are you?
I'm great. And you must have, what did you think of Jeff King's story? Was that something?
I just want to say I need some of that jerky. I love myself some jerky. I am on board 100. I'm definitely going to be ordering some of that yummy stuff.
Yeah, but here's a guy who had no idea this was going to happen. In his spare time, he just started making it in his kitchen, and all of a sudden, people wanted it. And then he's not sleeping at all. He's got to get up and in his own kitchen, you know, take it out of the place where it's being marinated, put it in the dryer every 3 hours. Right. He's not getting any sleep. Now, that 1%, right?
I was just going to say, that's the true definition. 3 hours sleep, making that dream a reality? Come on, that's what it's about.
Exactly. And you know what the funny thing is? He didn't even know it was a dream.
Right.
You know, that's the beauty of it. He's doing something because he's got time and everybody likes it and they want it. And now, you know, he's not going to have to caddy ever in his life again if he doesn't feel like it, right? It's wonderful. So when you talk about ridding people of the limiting self-beliefs that stem from the overwhelming insecurity and fears that we have as humans growing up. And so many of us have them, even if you don't want to admit it.
Right.
I think, all of a sudden his name went right out of my mind. He coaches Tiger Woods and Justin Rose and, you know, he's, what's his name? Swing coach.
Gia. Oh, Butch?
No.
Oh, the swing coach.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Sean Foley.
Sean Foley, yeah.
Sean Foley said that there are times in his life, you know, when he knows that it's not him, it's his shadow. And his shadow is when he was the kid that was him in sixth grade, who had maybe a chip on his shoulder. I'm not going to go into detail, but it's all of us grow up with these things and we don't really get rid of them. We're still in elementary school, part of us.
Right.
Now, how do we get past those self-limiting beliefs about ourselves?
Wow, it's such a fun conversation, and how I approach it, and I'm just so committed to working
backwards. And I think the mistake that so many of us make is we work from today. Okay, I have these doubts. I have these fears. How do I get rid of them? How do I hide them? How do I make them go away? Instead of, okay, this is where you are, and this is what I had to do later in my life. Look, I'm scared. I'm fearful. But where do I want to go? Where do I want to be? Draw that picture, mentally create that future picture first, working backwards. Because here's what I found as a fact. I mean, just from my own experience, the fear and the doubt cannot coexist with that mental picture that I've created in the future. If I'm emotionally connected to what it is I want, what it is, and it's more than just desire, what it is I guarantee I will have, that fear and that doubt cannot coexist if I commit myself to creating that picture. And I think, you know, I lived when I was a kid, you know, scared of my own shadow, scared, fearful, and it never went away because I was trying to make it disappear. And by doing that, I gave it more power. But when I said, look, I'm done. I've decided I am done living this way. What do I want to live? How do I want to live? How do I want to play in my sports? What kind of targets do I want to attack? What kind of records do I want to break? When I got immersed in that type of mindset, the fear and the doubt almost instantaneously went away. Like it just, it can't coexist, Daniel. And I think that's the mistake. And I don't want to speak for Tiger. I don't know Tiger personally. I obviously have never spoken to him, but I think, you know, where he's at, he's about right today. And that shadow and that, the, you know, you say pressure, the intensity of that record is just weighing so heavy on him, you know, but it would be very interesting to sit down and talk to him and see where his future vision is versus today's weight on his shoulders.
Because, you know, in his post-round interviews and his, even before the round, before the tournament begins, he's very optimistic.
Sure.
You know, right? He's going to play his best golf. I mean, he came off the Firestone victory, right? Why wouldn't he be optimistic? But then as the first round goes a little south, he's, well, you know, and all the guys are playing really, really well. And, you know, it's like, wait a minute, is this Tiger Woods?
Right.
But, you know, it's just there's some, and yeah, there's almost like, listen, people, I want you to know that I'm human. I'm copping to being human. And I do have this dream, but I'm not sure, Coach Dane, that his dream is as alive as it is was. You know, the doubt seemed to have crept in.
Oh, no, he's human. Like, he's human and he's inhuman. He's a freak mentally, focus level and hunger and. But at the same time, he now, for the first time, really cares what we think, right? And I've been saying, like, he cares what we think for the first, like, before it was like, whatever. I mean, now it is definitely, it is definitely weighing on him. I mean, because it's obviously not a physical. I mean, he lapsed the field last week, and then this week, it's like, I gotta win. I've said this before, and I almost want to guarantee it. It's not if versus, you know, can he versus will he? You know, then that's the question. It's if he gets one soon, it's over. Like if he gets one now, just like with the regular tour events, once he busted through, then he became that Tiger. But it's almost like he's playing a separate game now.
Yeah.
You know, the regular events versus the majors.
He is playing a separate game. I was saying this morning, who's the imposter who's sitting in for Tiger?
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't know who that person is because he has none of the confidence, none of the smile. The guy who walked off Firestone holding Charlie in his arms, getting that wonderful neck hug. You know, the kid when they put their nose in your neck, there's nothing like
right.
that in the world.
Right.
But they
right.
say that a warrior can never have children because spiritually it puts a hole and makes you vulnerable.
Right.
So, you know, there's so many things that have changed in his life that have made him vulnerable. And he has to admit that, and somehow go, yeah, I'm vulnerable, but I'm not.
Right.
When I walk on the golf course, I'm not. And
I
still think he's thinking too much about his swing, and he needs to start playing. You work with people, including some of the grinders on the tour. We tend to talk about the stars, but the guys who are working every day.
Right.
May I say his name?
Absolutely.
Aaron Oberholzer, you know,
right.
a PGA Tour pro that you work with. Tell us about working together.
We sat down. Aaron's amazing. We sat down for almost 4 hours, close to 4 hours. And he's coming off of an injury, and it's so interesting at this level where their mentalities are. He came, and before we introduced, he said, hi, we've been talking back and forth, and we sat down, and he said, man, he said, I just got off the course, I shot like 200 or 300, I'm so upset. Like, what? I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, that's crazy mentality. He came off like 200 or 300, and he's upset. And those are the standards, dude. He talks about high standards, holding a specific standard for himself that the majority don't understand. We sat down, and without getting into specifics, I don't want to break the trust, but we sat down and talked about, his vision and his why, really breaking down, because he's making a comeback from injury. His game is still there, but we sat down and really pinpointed and got super emotionally connected to what his future vision is going to look like and why he's doing this, why he's making that comeback, what is driving him emotionally, right? And it was intense, and he got super intense, and it was just such an amazing transformation to watch, over the course of 3.5-4 hours from someone who just shot 300 and is upset and is doubting a little bit to when we were done, he was just on fire. I mean, he was just like, it's for this reason, it's for this reason, I'm going to do it for this. And he's just like, and he's considered this guy's an amazing player.
Yes, he is.
Right? I mean,
it's, yes. The thing that you brought up, two things. First of all, yeah. The doubting. When you tell me to create an image, a vision of what I want in the future so that all my fears can go away, that, first of all, is going to take some work. You just don't, right?
It's going to take crazy work. I mean, it was interesting you said that. When we're done, Aaron says, okay, don't take it personally, but I'm going to go quiet for, 2-3 weeks or so I can get this picture embedded. And this, so that the doubt slowly disappears. Because this is, and this is what we've got to understand. And I don't care what we're talking about specifically, right? It takes total immersion in that picture. You can't just say I want it and see it once in a while. It takes a total commitment into what that thing is going to guarantee 100% look like, right? And then every day you just live it, and then you put in the work to make that happen, and then you live it again visually over and over. And the fear and the doubt subtly, you feel this burst of confidence, which instantly makes some of that fear go away instantly. And then the daily grind to create that vision, the daily action, waking up earlier and putting in the hours and putting in more hours than your opponents. I mean, that really helps create that confidence, putting in more hours than the dude that's trying to take your spot. And so, yes, it is every day, as many hours as possible, living in it, because the subconscious will manifest it for you, but you've got to give it some emotional connection.
You have to believe it. You have to believe it, because there's going to be that voice inside of you that says, nah.
Right, right. And people around you saying, no, what are you doing? Like, no, you, like, this isn't, whether Aaron making a comeback or a Tiger trying to break the record. You're going to have more people saying you can't, whether it's jealousy or whether it's just the average mentality, then you are going to have people telling you can and you will, and I guarantee it'll happen. You got to, right? And that's where, I mean, that's why I say it's 1%. I mean, and it's really, truly less than 1%. I just don't want to tweet 0.05. I just don't want to write 0.05 all the time. It's just too difficult.
We're talking with Coach Dane, Dane Gingrich. You can find him at Coach Dane. It's DAYNE.com. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Coach Dane. You know what you say here? This is a part that we're kind of grown. A lot of us grew up with this. I'm not allowed to think highly of myself.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I've got to be humble. I got to have humility. Right. I can't think I'm pretty. I can't think I'm smart. That's not the way the world works.
Right.
So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what do we do about that part?
Well, I mean, that's it. I mean, why can't you be humble? Why can't you show humility and still be crazy confident? Why can't we have high standards, set high expectations for ourselves, and still when we're playing, when we step on the course, We don't have to be disrespectful on the range, on the practice screen. You know, we don't have to be disrespecting anybody. You don't have to be in people's faces and say, I'm going to break records, right? I'm going to come and I'm going to shatter every record. You don't have to say any of that. That's humility. But the inner drive, the inner confidence, the inner, you know, bordering on arrogance, just inner, like the arrogance I'm talking about is an inner arrogance where you just know when you step out onto the course or the basketball court or wherever, like, you just know it's your tournament. You just know. You have, and in that, you know, the reason that people tell us to not raise our bar, to not set high expectations, is the fear of the disappointment. And that's failure is necessity. Number one, it's inevitable. But number two, it's mandatory for our growth, right? I never lose. Like the 1% family, the mentality that I help try to create in my students, clients, and, you know, family is we never lose. The score may not come out the way we want it, but we still never lose. We can grow. We can learn from every situation. And that's, you know, setting the high expectations or, you know, I had a fun conversation with Charlie Reimer on Twitter, you know, last week about high expectations. And we went back and forth. And he said, you shouldn't. And I said, you have to. And I said, you think Tiger doesn't have high expectations? You don't think Michael Jordan had high? I mean, their expectations are off the charts, which is why they are who they are. Now, when you don't, but when you set these expectations, Danielle, you set them with pre-acceptance. That you know you accept every outcome possible, right? If I don't win, I already knew that's a possibility. That's okay. I still haven't lost. And then I set my standards crazy high the next tournament, pre-accepting the big picture of the tournament. And then we talk about the micro, the small details of each shot. And we just got to understand, like, if you view, Danielle, failure, obstacles as a positive, as a necessary ingredient to the success, you will no longer be afraid to set those high standards. Right? Come on, Danielle.
No, I love it. I love it. I'm totally with you. The high expectations I talk about, don't have expectations of going to the course if you haven't practiced and expect to hit a fantastic day. But what you're saying, and I agree with you 100%, if you already accept whatever outcome comes, have great expectations. There's nothing wrong with that. But just know inside of you, accept the outcome. The outcome will be a lesson. A lesson, I should have practiced more. Whatever, right? Or whatever it happens to be, you're going to learn from your failures and then fail again and learn from those failures. And I love your phrase, fail better.
Yes, fail better. Fail better. Just learn to fail better. I'm reading a book by Tavis Smiley, Fail Up. The same thing. Like, we have to have those. You said it. If you pre-accept and you set your bar high, it's a win-win. You can't lose. You will never lose again.
No, you're right. You're right. No, so I know you didn't get a chance. We didn't get a chance to see much of St. Andrews and Inbee Park's going for history because we got 3 hours on television in the States, you know, and there was, but there were so many expectations. She took it in such, with such grace and dignity. It was wonderful to see, even though I think she shot 40 something on the back nine. It was just the fact that she was going for it and she smiled the whole way, you know, and is impressed with what she's accomplished so far. And knows that she can accomplish so much more in the future. It's wonderful.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It definitely weighed on her shoulders, obviously. And she's a human. She's a robot, and that's okay. You know, I would have loved, like, you know, there's no way I can talk accurately about her preparation. You know, what she visualized, what she thought about, how she mentally prepared for that. But you know, it would have been very interesting to sit down and talk to her and get her immersed in. And not winning the tournament, but immersed in just playing beyond how, you know, setting her standards even higher.
Right.
Not for the win, right? Not for the winning of the tournament, not for the media, not for the record, but just her own game, just her own. Okay, you've won three in a row, and you're amazing. But we can play better. Let's visualize you just playing the best you've ever played. Let's just put you in that mentality. Let's connect you emotionally to that that round, like these rounds are going to be the best you've ever played. Totally
I've got to stop us. These rounds are because, you know, I've got like 60 seconds to thank the people who make this show possible.
Go.
Thank you, Dane Gingrich, for being on the show. You can find him at CoachDane.com. And thank you to our sponsors, brought to you by Acura of Honolulu. Now more than ever, choosing an Acura just makes sense. With the traffic we've got, you should ride in comfort. Test drive the Acura RLX and Acura RLX Advance. Poipu Bay, you gotta go. 18 championship holes, stunning. It's an unforgettable, unique golf experience. It is Poipu Bay. And Star Protection, get your property threat and risk assessed and get the Star team on your property, whether it's for your business or your home. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is, oh, thank you for your mana. This is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2013.